Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
The Swedish are so great that their bikes don't have wheels, people.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
That doesn't mean they're going to magically stop fighting 30 seconds later.
With Margaret Apples
and Amy Wilson.
We're not suggesting if you have too many children, give one of them away.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
How can I make this more fun for everybody?
Hello, one and all, and welcome to What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And this week we are talking about what in our parenting can we add and what can we take away. This is a topic that I could have had on our list. I wanted to talk about it. And then last week's Fresh Take with Amanda Montell, we had one part of our conversation. I thought, oh, yeah, this is it. And this is a whole episode. And I cannot wait to talk about this.
Yeah, this, I could see all of Amy's neurons light up when this came up, but it is super interesting, and I also have a lot of thoughts on it, so away we go, Amy.
Let's get right to the science. So today we're talking about something that Amanda mentioned in the episode, in her book, which is called The Age of Magical Overthinking. There's a cognitive bias that all of us humans all have, which is something called the additive solution bias. And it is the tendency for all human beings, when we are faced with a problem, to favor adding things instead of taking things away as a means of solving the problem.
So fascinating.
Yes. Even when taking things away might be the better solution. And I have the perfect example, which is how kids learn to ride bikes. Certainly when we were growing up, everybody learning to ride bikes, you learned how to ride a bike by adding training wheels to the bike. You add the training wheels, the kid learns to ride the bike with the training wheels because they can't balance. And then at some point you have to take the training wheels back off. But the way you get a kid who can't ride a bike to ride a bike is to add training wheels to the bike. Then like the Danish baby solution, they get everything right over there. They were the first ones to figure out, they used to be called Leica bikes. Now they're just like balance bikes. And I mean, 20 years ago, they were very rare in the United States. And now you see them everywhere, which is just those like, you know, those wooden bikes that little kids use that don't have wheels at all. You see kids at the park riding them.
No, they don't have training wheels.
I'm sorry, you're right. They don't have training wheels.
They definitely have wheels, but you're right. They don't have training wheels. They do have...
What if you just remove all the wheels?
The Swedish are so great that their bikes don't have wheels, people.
They just imagine themselves to a new place.
It's huge.
Oh, yeah, they have the big wheels, but they don't have the wheels on the side. What they've taken away is the pedals. Turns out that those balance bikes are a far more effective way to teach a kid to ride a bike than the old bikes with the training wheels way. That by subtracting the pedals, the kids are focusing on the balance, which is the hard part of riding a bike. The hard part of riding a bike isn't pedaling, it's balancing. So they learn the balance and they get that in like a couple of days, and then the pedals are like the last 5%. Meanwhile, do you remember how hard it was to learn to ride a bike with the training wheels and like your dad letting go? And
super hard. And I've been getting back into yoga recently, and my yoga teacher is constantly saying, because I did ballet as a kid, so my instinct is always to turn my feet out. And in yoga, your feet are supposed to basically face like front and back, right? Like
right, like God made them, yeah, like under your hips.
Yeah, like they're supposed to, your toes are supposed to be forward. In ballet, you can picture like second position. Your heels are together and your toes are pointing outwards, away from each other. And so in every position, and I understand balance as like your foot at a 45-degree angle is where I find my balance, right? Like if your feet are slightly outwards, that helps you balance. And she's always saying, not just to me, but to the whole class, learn it the right way. Like just find your balance on your front, you know, toes out foot.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you're going to learn it with your foot at a 45 degree angle. You're going to have to relearn the balance, which is the hard part. Like she's always talking about just this thing.
And don't add to it. Right. Like the way that your body naturally balances is probably the way that your foot wants you to place it.
Yeah, I guess so.
So anyway, so this is the perfect example. I bought this training wheels thing of like, right. And it took somebody finally figured out, no, you remove the pedals. You take something away. You don't add something. And that's the elegant solution. But it's very hard for our brains to do that. So I wanted today to talk about why that is, why our brains are like that, why it's a problem that our brains are like that sometimes.
Yep.
And then how we can maybe try some subtractive solutions in our parenting sometimes. I mean, I want to say up front, like it isn't like taking something away is always better than adding something. That's not it. But it's that we tend to not even consider it.
We're not suggesting if you have too many children, give one of them away. That's not going to work for you.
I mean, not always.
Not always. Not always.
So there was this study that Amanda Montel mentioned in the interview, and I went and looked up the original study. It was at the University of Virginia. This engineer named Lydie Klotz, we'll hear more about Lydie Klotz later, but Lydie Klotz wanted to investigate whether people actually overlook subtraction when they're coming up with solutions. Lydie Klotz sort of observed this and thought, can I prove that this is a thing, that people overlook subtraction? So they asked 91 participants, they had them look in a symmetrical pattern. I'm showing Margaret right now, if you can see the patterns, I'll have to figure out a way to maybe put these in the show notes so people can see them because it's interesting. Because it's just it's a grid paper with some squares in the grid colored in, and it's a little bit asymmetrical. You have to make this symmetrical. So if you look at the first one there, to make this thing symmetrical, there were probably 18 squares colored in. You have to remove 3 to make it totally symmetrical. But instead, people added 9 more to make it symmetrical.
Oh, okay.
It's like they didn't understand that. They just didn't even consider it. They just added stuff. They weren't told they had to add stuff. They were told they had to change things to make it symmetrical, and everybody just added instead of subtracted.
Right. So basically what you're looking at, because you all can't see these pictures, is pictures that are symmetrical. They line up.
Yeah.
And you could see where it's like a star with like a little cube in the corner, you could add 3 more cubes to make it match, or you could just take the cube away and make it match. And I would definitely have failed this test.
Yep.
And I would have added like 47 more. Right. Cubes.
Better keep going. Yep. And the other part of this study that was interesting is they, instead of like working directly with people, they went to the university. The university had recently gotten a new president. And when a university gets a new president, everybody's showing up with the ideas, right? Like, this is what I think we should do. Everybody sent in proposals. There were 650 proposals submitted, and only 11% of them involved eliminating or removing something. The other 89% were like, we have to add something to the university to make it better. So it seems we tend to do this.
This is going to be, I can tell already, very useful for parenting. I mean, the idea that we have to constantly add to what we are doing, to how we are parenting, that we have to put out book traps for the kids to fall into, that we have to make sure that they learn their extra language, that we have to find the right tutor to help them thrive in this. Like, this is so much of parenting.
Mm-hmm. And the reason, they don't really know why this happens. They didn't even prove this study that this is like baked in the cake versus something that kids learn. They didn't do this with children to see if it was different. But people are thinking this is probably a sort of thing that we've had around. We had a psychologist named Dr. Yael Schoenbrunn on the show. Work, Parent, Thrive is the name of her book. She talked about this a little bit in our Fresh Take, so I'll put the link in the show notes. Her book is called Work, Parent, Thrive, and she talked about this adding things and subtracting things a little bit. But her point of view on this was that it is a biological imperative that for most of human history, we deal with scarcity. And if you're a parent, you're really dealing with scarcity, right? Do I have enough for these children, for my whole family? And the solutions to your problems are, by definition, additive, right? We need
more food, more water, more safety, more shelter.
Right. We have to get more of everything every single day. And so, you know, she argues where now, of course, our world has evolved. So most of us typically are having our basic needs very well met. Our kids already have 2,000 toys. You know, there's food in the refrigerator. We're doing okay. And so this solution that our brain has come up with to always look for more as a way to solve a problem doesn't match. Our biology doesn't match our culture.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you watch a nature documentary, what's incredible is that even a lioness who's like the hunter, right? And you just think that she's hungry all the time. And they say because you're kind of rooting for the buffalo or whatever poor thing is trying to get away from her. But they say if she uses up the resources to hunt and she fails in the hunt, she's in more trouble every time. Like a lioness can starve because they're not hunting enough every single day, you know? I mean, I think that there is I have no idea, but it makes sense to me that there is an inherent drive to gather and, you know, protect and do more.
Right.
To do, maybe, not to do more. Like the lioness is do get food for children.
Well, and also I think there is a secondary thing too, which is that when you're doing more, when you're buying more, when you're acquiring more, it's showing effort. Like your effort is visible. It seems like you're trying harder. And so that's going to be rewarded implicitly by those around you. Like you're going to get approval for how hard you're working to keep your kids happy on the airplane or whatever, right? There's doing more there is a performative thing that we're going to get from the world around us. Like you're doing a good job when you're adding things, when you're doing more in a way that you wouldn't get that same sort of approbation for
doing less.
So I think then that's more subtle, but I think that's part of it. And then there's every single time you turn on the television, open your phone, look at the internet, an additive solution is being offered.
It's capitalism, baby. Yes. Someone is telling you.
Right.
My dad was just saying, I was down visiting my dad, and he was saying about something people are so clever. Someone's figured out everything. This thing burns you when you cook it. Here's the lid piece that you can add to not get burned. And capitalism specifically as a system, I think, fuels this, right? That if I can invent the thing that solves the problem, that's how I'm going to make money. And so, you won't believe me, late night TV, this doesn't exist for people anymore. But back in our day, right?
That's what I was just thinking. The as seen on TV stuff, right?
As seen on TV at a certain time or whatever. I mean, we saw all of them. There were infomercials. And it would introduce a problem. Let me give you the example.
Opening a can, right?
Of the Slanket, I was going to say. It's like a guy on the couch trying to change the channels with his remote, but his blanket is practically leaping off of him and choking him as he tries to. So then he gets a blanket with arms, the Slanket, and then he's just cozy while changing channels on the TV.
That's an additive solution by us. Yeah, get a Slanket.
It's an additive solution. And it's extremely debatable whether or not part one was ever really a problem. Isn't a blanket pretty much okay? Do you really need a blanket with arms?
Do you really need another one? I mean, I am guilty as charged. I love a pretty blanket. I love a throw, and I am constantly chasing the ideal one.
I'm here to say that we own two Slankets in my house. I've got no shame in my Slanket game. My kids love a Slanket. But it is right. Every single thing starts with don't you hate it when, and something's bubbling or spitting or not opening or, and the person's always doing this very exaggerated frustration face. But wait, there's a solution.
Here it is.
As seen on TV, someone has invented something to solve a problem you didn't even know was a problem.
Right, right. But now you better have it. Right. And I think for parents, this has just turned up to 11. If you want what's best for your children, you better get this kind of peanut butter. You better, get this kind of car. You better get them this kind of fruit juice or no fruit juice or whatever that you have to do this thing to sort of prove that you're doing everything you can. And I just think for parents, it's a special thing and it can become.
I would argue that unlike the Slanket, which is solving a non-existent problem, that parents have a host of hard to solve problems.
Oh, you're so right.
Like my kid comes home every day with a sandwich they didn't eat and some fruit they didn't touch. But I saw these people who make these like bento box lunches where like everything has a smiley face on the sandwich. And maybe that's the solution to a kid who won't eat lunch. And maybe tutoring is a solution to a kid who's not reading in the second or third grade. And maybe this kind of camp is a solution to a kid who's disruptive at home. And like, it's much harder than the blanket problem because the problems are real.
Let's take a break, because when we come back, we're going to talk about why having problems like that makes you even more likely to use the additive solution bias. Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at them. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. Amy, you know me well enough to know that my daily power breakfast is toast with peanut butter on top.
Toast with peanut butter. It's also, by the way, one of my favorite power breakfasts. So we agree on that thing.
We were recently together and we shared some toast with peanut butter. And I'm going to tell you, we used Hero Bread. It adds even more protein and fiber to that combo without adding any more sugar.
Hero Bread has remade the carby, empty calorie bread products into versions that include no net carbs, 0 gram sugar, and fewer calories, plus more protein and fiber, while still being super fluffy and delicious. I was not sure that that particular combination was going to be possible, but Hero Bread has figured it out.
Yeah, this is one I'm glad they let us try. It's like, it really tastes good. I've been trying to add more protein to my diet, and I would have thought that a hamburger rolls was not the place to do that, Amy. But all of Hero Bread's products, from rolls to tortillas to croissants, oui please, offer protein and fiber, 0 to 1 grams of net carbs, and 0 grams of sugar.
Start your Hero Bread bundle on their website and get 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code MOTHERHOOD at checkout.
I like this bread, people. It's HERO.CO and code MOTHERHOOD for 10% off your order of Hero Bread.
So parenting, we've all got, you know, our problems we're dealing with our kids, the things we're trying to solve, as you were saying before. And here's the thing. Studies show that the harder a problem is, the more likely you are to use additive bias to solve it. The greater the challenge, the more likely you're going to be like, I have to fix this by adding something. Or the more stressed you are about the problem. I mean, it could be like a bear is chasing you, but it can also be like, my second grader isn't reading at grade level. Is a bear chasing you? No. Does it maybe feel like it at 3 a.m. sometimes? For sure. And so the more important a problem seems to you, your cognitive burden is increased, your stress. That's when you're more likely to turn to like, I have to add something to fix this. And what parent isn't under an additional cognitive burden at all times, 24/7?
This makes so much sense.
So when you add things, you are, of course, by definition, making it more complex and not necessarily increasing efficiency, like the tax code, right? Like, think of the things that we try to fix by adding something. The Constitution, right? Like, oh, except for this. Oh, and one more thing, this. And it just gets more complex and maybe more complicated. And this is fascinating. There's something called Brace's Paradox. This is dorky, but I thought this was fascinating.
Oh, please. We love a paradox, people.
I mean, we all know the German mathematician Dietrich Brace, after whom this paradox is named.
I mean, huge fans. I subscribe to his newsletter. although
his Substack is great, even though he passed 45 years ago. Turns out, according to Brace's paradox, he studied and was able to show that adding one or more roads to a network of roads can slow traffic instead of increase traffic flow.
This is also true, having lived in Los Angeles, of highway lanes, that people think that you add a lane, it slows traffic down.
This is a thing, and he was able to show this, and it's been proven since then. This applies to electrical power grids. It applies to biological systems, that this idea of adding something, creating more lanes for something to happen, actually slows things down more. It doesn't increase that. So the solution around this is to maybe be subtractive. So in 2009, Times Square, everybody's been at Times Square at some point, right? Like, it's choked with pedestrians. And until about 10 years ago, also choked with traffic, like going right down Broadway. So this is like 10 or 15 years ago. They experimented with improving the traffic around Times Square by closing off some streets, by making some streets just complete pedestrian plaza. So you can't drive on certain streets not around Times Square anymore. And of course, that improved the experience for the pedestrians, but it also did improve the traffic in the surrounding area. There's less traffic when there's fewer roads for people to drive on in Times Square.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
So I forgot to tip my hat at the beginning of this to the decorative basket bias, because that's really what we should call this. That's our corollary to the additive solution
bias. We talked about this with Amanda Montell. She had not heard of the decorative basket bias, but...
No. I believe it's named after you.
Yeah, I believe I am the inventor. I am the Dietrich Brace of decorative baskets, Amy.
Will you explain your paradox as it plays out?
The decorative basket bias is that there somewhere exists, probably at the Container Store or some like-minded place, Home Goods, enough decorative baskets to solve the problem of your home organization. And that I think the home organization industry is big organizers.
Big org.
Is definitely fueling my need to constantly buy organizational systems, when in fact, I should probably be looking a lot at subtracting. I recently was helping clean out a house before a move, and it gave me that feeling of, oh, it's organized. Now, to be fair, it's a house that, my house has five people living in it. So there's five bikes and five, you know, times 25 t-shirts. I mean, there's too much stuff in my house, which is part of the problem. But it was so nice to be in a space where everything. I was just in Amy's apartment, who lives in New York City, and like, you have this going on too. Like, there's just not a lot of stuff. Small bedrooms.
There's nowhere to put stuff. Right. You saw my son's room and you're like, wow, this is a small room. Like, yeah, it is.
It's like, oh wow, this room is quite small. Yeah. And yet everything, but it's organized. And
it has to be. And he has like four sweatshirts, because that's what there's room for.
Yeah. And this stuff just expands to fill the space in such a way that then big decorative basket comes in and is like, no, like, here's an organizer that will keep your sheets organized. And I just did this where I went on Amazon and I found these sheet organizers, because I can never have the right sheets for the bed. And I'm realizing, after having just been at cleaning out this other house, what I need is a sheet for every bed and then one spare, and that's it. And everything else must go. Because what's happening is, one of the sets doesn't have a pillowcase, and then we're pulling it, and then that one's dirty while you try to make the bed, and it's just, the whole system falls apart. I'm really, really dealing this with socks right now. I just keep buying more socks, thinking it's going to solve the problem.
It just creates more mismatched socks.
I need less socks.
Yes, you do. Well, let's talk about how we can understand this and start to shift our thinking, right? Like, we're on it. We've bought into this concept. We have too many baskets. I mean, I love a basket, and sometimes baskets are great. They're not never great, but the point is, they're not always the answer.
No, and I mean, a couple of weeks ago, organized my cords. You know, we had the basket of a million cords and headphones, and I did do a box, which each different kind of cord, and they're in these little, you know, what's that word? Not vinyl. They're like white see-through, you know, plastic boxes. And I will say, this morning I was at Amy's yesterday recording, so I didn't have my setup. And I was like, oh, let me grab the headphone box. And there were a pair of headphones, and I pulled them out, and it was satisfying.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. So like, I'm into that. Like, I have like my vitamins and a thing, but sometimes the answer is less vitamins and throw out the broken headphones. Sometimes the answer is both, maybe, right? And I think understanding this means that you can have to sort of notice, like, is this always the answer? So I'm quoting productivity expert Anthony Sani here. He says, understanding our patterns for solving problems will help us notice when we're doing things a certain way that is maybe not the best way. And so he says that, like, adding things, I think it feels not just like the natural choice, but it also feels like the more virtuous choice, right? Like, buying more decorative baskets is the more virtuous, active, look what I'm doing way to solve that you have too much stuff in your house. But it might be a shortcut.
I think that's right. And I also think that I'm going to plug Amy's upcoming book here.
Ooh.
Amy has a book coming out next year, which is phenomenal. But
Happy to Help, it's called, yes.
It's called Happy to Help, Confessions of a People Pleaser. And it has, I'm thinking of the essays from your book very much as we're talking about this too, that part of the problem, part of the pattern we might need to understand about ourselves is, what is my role in this story? Because I think as moms and as like people who consider ourselves to be capable and stuff, I at some point was at one of my early jobs being a like eager beaver, you know, college grad, like, let me show you what I can do, getting my stupid stapling task or whatever they'd given me, like, done super efficiently and like handing it in. And don't I get a gold star? Look at how great I did. And one of the kind of grizzled older, it was a law firm, paralegals, put his hand on my shoulder and he said, listen, kid, the only reward for good work is more work. I just think part of it is checking ourselves to be like, am I Captain Save this situation? And is that a true role for me here? Like, because I think our brains tell us, like, no one's coming to save us. It's me. Hi, I'm the solution. It's me. And that part of our job can sometimes be to say, you know what? Maybe it's not me.
Right. Or maybe doing less or taking something away for this problem I'm dealing with is the right answer. Like, sometimes it's not your problem, and that is a possible solution. And sometimes it is your problem. Like, okay, your kid's not reading at grade level, and what do you do? Right. Let's just take that example because we were talking about it. You can say, like, I'm not going to worry about it at all. You can say, we'll check in 6 months. We'll worry about it then. Those are totally valid things to do. But let's say there's come a day where the teacher said to you, you need to be doing some enrichment outside the classroom. Let's say like it's been handed to you. This is the thing, you got to do it. You can, as you were saying, add tutoring, add a system. But this is the moment where you need to consider, I think, because the stress is building up and like, I have to fix this and I have to fix this right now. And I have to show how hard I'm working to fix this. That the answer might be, for example, to do less. How could you do subtractive in this? You could have, you know, 9 to 10 p.m. becomes reading time before bed. That's a little late for a second grader, so you might want to take my advice with I was forgetting how old this kid was.
Move it back a little bit, people.
But yeah, you might want to take away, you know, the switch after 7:30 or whatever. That has to be something you consider instead of like, how can I find the best expert in the tri-state area to fix this problem right now?
Right. And this, we're not making this prescriptive, right? Like, it's not like in every situation, figure out what you can take away. It's not always the right solution to every single problem, but it is something to at least consider. I think for someone like me, and Amy, I think you're probably the same, we very rarely go to what can we take away. We just are wired, and I bet a lot of our listeners are wired to say, problem, how can I get involved? How can I solve it? And what am I going to bring to solve it? And I think it really is a question of perspective. And it, you know, we've talked to so many people and about so many things on the podcast that I don't always have in every episode, like that moment of, oh, gasp, like I've never thought of that before. Sometimes it's like a revisiting of ideas and I'm like, oh, right, that sounds familiar. But when we were talking to Amanda Montell, and we'll link to that episode and go listen to it if you haven't heard it yet, this idea of that the majority of people look at a problem and think about what to add to it, and that it goes against our fundamental instincts to look at a problem and think, what can we subtract to it? To me was one of those moments like, oh, wait a minute. It's not that I'm going to look at every single thing and be like, I'm going to take one thing off. I'm always going to subtract.
The Coco Chanel approach to life.
Coco Chanel, right. That's the famous, like, look at your outfit and take one thing off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just adding this to your idea, to your mind palace, like adding this as a potential solution, I think is so freeing.
Right. I first heard this from Carolyn Dougley. She has a book called The Sensory Child Gets Organized that was very helpful to me when my kids were younger. And she first framed this and what can you add and what can you take away? And I think that is the point.
Right. You've definitely said it before.
Yeah. And we'll have some examples. We're gonna talk about some concrete ways you can start to think about this. But I think that's the point. You are asking both questions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just you're considering that there's a default answer you've been defaulting to when really the opposite might be the thing to consider. All right, let's take a break. We'll talk about how to sort of put this into play.
Solutions. Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own. And today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practiced after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
And now, things you will do this spring.
From the What Fresh Hell podcast.
Find things you thought were lost forever as the snow finally melts.
Panic about how late you are to sign up for spring sports before you start to panic about how late you are for summer camp signups.
Realize it's probably too early to pull out the outdoor furniture.
Put out the outdoor furniture anyway.
Make your family eat outside even though it's 45 degrees out because you went to all the trouble of putting out the outdoor furniture.
Your taxes.
You did do your taxes, right? Okay, go and do your taxes.
Get a little too excited at the farmer's market and buy $100 worth of vegetables.
Curse at yourself a week later as you throw out $93 worth of vegetables.
Get snowed on the sidelines of a soccer game.
Also, get a vicious sunburn on the sidelines of a soccer game.
Make your entire family gather around a single crocus at the park while you shout, "Winter is really going to end!"
This has been Things You Will Do This Spring
from the What Fresh Hell podcast. So my favorite example of this, what can you add, what can you take away, that I got from Carolyn Dougleish's book on sensory kids and getting organized was the downstairs toothbrush. I've talked about that before, but this was the, like, every morning at school, my kids would disappear upstairs to brush their teeth before they left for school. And then it would be like 14 minutes later and I'd be like, what are you doing out there? We have to leave for school. And then frantic. So what can you add? What can you take away? We have like a tiny like powder room downstairs. I put a set of toothbrushes in there and they started brushing their teeth downstairs instead of going back upstairs. And it transformed our mornings. So like strictly speaking, that is adding something. I added downstairs toothbrushes, but what I took away, the trip upstairs.
No, you took away the trip upstairs.
Right. Like once they came downstairs dressed, they did not go back upstairs. And that's what solved our mornings. But it was thinking of that, always thinking of it through both of those things. And I continue to do that for my kids. Like, you know, even when my kids are grown, basically, when things are getting intense, when people are cranky, you know, when things seem hard, you have to consider what can we maybe pull out of this situation, right? What obligation can we remove from our calendar right now instead of how can I make this more fun for everybody?
Yeah, that's a good one. This one is staring right at me personally with an accusing finger. A disorganized person may need a desk with nothing on it, nothing on the wall above, instead of a 32-piece organizing system. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wish I could pan out to my desk right now, which looks like something from hell. I mean, there is stuff everywhere, including like vitamins. Here is Amy some nail polish. I mean, here is a speaker, 40,000 pens. There's, you know, it's just, I'm like, well, I'll put it at my desk, then I'll remember to have it. And then I need an organizing. Here is a Taylor Swift Eras Tour mug that I got at the movie. Do I use it? I don't. I thought maybe I would put pens in it. I don't. But how could I throw it away? It's the Taylor Swift Eras cup that I got at the movie.
You can't throw it away now. I mean, sunk cost fallacy. You have it now. You better keep it until you figure out an important thing use for it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We have to do sunk cost fallacy because, man, am I deep in it. And will I someday need a red pen that writes on a whiteboard, even though I don't currently have a whiteboard at my desk? I'm just showing all of these things to Amy. Like, no whiteboard, but four whiteboard pens because someday I may get a whiteboard again.
I can see a few things you can take away. What can you add? The answer is nothing. You can't add anything because you have it all.
Nothing. No more adding. But it's true that my instinct is to look at this and say, okay, sometimes I do like to do my nails at my desk. So I have three nail polishes on my desk, even though right now I have my nails done, so I don't need them. Like, oh, well, I should get a little holder where they'll live on my desk. And that, no, I should just take them off my desk.
Mm-hmm. And this makes me think a little bit of Casey Davis, who hosts Struggle Care, part of the Atlas Media Network. And she has this idea that's really helped me. That's like, I feel bad throwing things away sometimes. And always, yes, if you can reduce, reuse, recycle, yes, 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 I know. But like, I had like 14 mugs that didn't match in my house, but one was like from my kid's course and another one was from like somewhere we went on vacation once. And another one was one somebody gave me when we were in a play together. And like, I had all these mismatched mugs that were taking up all this place in my kitchen that I wasn't using. We were using the same two or three mugs every day. And I felt like I had to keep these and maybe find a better way to sort them and organize them. Or you just get rid of the mugs, right? I mean, it's just, but I was holding on to like, you can't just do that. You can't just get rid of things. But sometimes that is the better answer than organizing all the stuff you have more decoratively.
Yes, let's touch on very briefly sunk cost fallacy, which Amanda Montel also talked about. It's something that I am plagued by, which is I've already spent money on this, and so therefore I have to keep spending money on it until it's solved, because otherwise I've wasted the money I've already spent on it. It is, I have had all these mugs for so many years that now to get rid of them seems like such a shame because I kept them for so long. This is called the sunk cost fallacy. Why? Because it is not true. And that's right. Like, I might someday use this cord is not a good reason to have cords that attack you every time you open a certain drawer in your home.
I'd like you to, I'm going to pull that as a clip from this episode. I'm going to like send it to my husband to listen to because he is a big, but we might need this person. And, you know, so am I sometimes too. But particularly with like speaker wire and stuff.
Right. We might need it someday.
We do live in a world where you can find that stuff. And again, I don't want to like create more garbage, but the garbage is in my house.
But this is the thing. Let me tell you, when it becomes garbage, when it crosses your threshold, it becomes garbage. It doesn't make it not garbage that you keep it on your desk for 5 years. It doesn't make it magically not garbage. it's still garbage.
Mm-hmm. Or it may, doesn't make you a better person that you kept the mug that somebody gave you that you didn't really want for 5 years.
Doesn't make you a better person.
Yeah, I needed to hear that. That's one. That's the part I needed to hear.
Believe me. Who am I talking to, Amy? Myself.
But there's,
I have just showed you all the things on my desk.
But there's all sorts of overload. There's not just too much stuff on the desk, which, I mean, I have too much stuff on my desk right now, too. But I have ponytail holders and a Sharpie and a plug that with nothing in it.
Just a floating brick.
And two water glasses. But there's other kinds of overload. So I wanted to tick through, like, there's all things, like, what can you take away and subtraction is, like, sensory inputs, right, is something that you can consider having less of. I'm talking about times when it's like your kid is being difficult. It's too much. Your house is stressful. Your house is chaotic. You can't get out the door to school in the morning, whatever the problem is. There's things you can take away that aren't just like, give me your phones because you're not ready for school yet, right? It can just be sensory inputs. It can be, is there music on? Is there not music on? Should there be music on? Should we dim the lights a little bit? The amount of stuff you have around, the commitments that you have as a family or that your kids have. Lydie Klotz, who is one of these researchers, came up with something called the stop doing list that he uses with his entire family. They put things on the stop doing list.
Yeah. I mean, see also me turning down the music when I have to parallel park. Like, it is sometimes that there is too much stuff going on at the same time. And people have very different set points on this too. I enjoy having loud music on when I'm cooking or cleaning. It makes me feel good. I have kids who are like, oh, can we turn that off? Like, they're distracted by it to do their homework, whatever it is. People have different set points for how much stuff they can handle. I mean, I had roommates for a while who, I mean, the house looked like a Williams-Sonoma catalog picture. And friends of mine would come over and say, where is the stuff? I'm like, I don't know. Their aesthetic was everything completely like catalog ready. It looked like a catalog. I can't live like that. I know that's beyond me. But for some people, that's their set point of happiness.
Right. Let's make sure we land on that, you know, as we start to talk about like takeaways, because I think that's important. This isn't like minimalism is better, right? Your kid gets 3 toys and that's it. And then you'll be a better person. And it's definitely not that subtraction is going to make everything easier immediately. Because it won't. I mean, even if it's maybe the right answer in a situation, first of all, it's harder for you to come to it as a solution. Like, your kids are fighting, you know, you have sibling rivalry and you're always getting involved and be like, why can't you do this? So maybe the solution is for you to do less, for you to step back, for you not to intervene. That doesn't mean they're going to magically stop fighting 30 seconds later, right? They'll probably fight more that afternoon and maybe the next day and maybe the next week. It's a long game sometimes. And so I don't want to be like, you're all a bad person if you have too many pens on your desk. That's not it at all.
No, I think what it is it's a pause to say, could subtraction be the answer? And one of the examples we didn't talk about, but I think it's good to land on because it brings home, I think, what we're both trying to say is like baby sleep. It's a thing where like there's a million products, right? This is the thing and it bounces and it cuddles and this is the thing that da, 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 da. Is the solution outside or is it here somewhere in like calmer lighting? Earlier bedtime often is a solution for kids who aren't sleeping, which seems very counterintuitive, right? Calmer environment versus more things that beep and boop and promise to make the right noise that people, you know, that gets babies to sleep. And so I think what we're saying to myself is my instinct is definitely decorative basket, add more, add to the solution. What do you need? How can I help? How can I fix it? What can I buy to make this easier? And I've said recently on the podcast, my husband and I had a sit down at the new year and we made a pact with each other that we don't order anything from Amazon without verbalizing it to the other person. Because we both just have this habit of like, oh, I bought these cord ties. Here they are in a plastic holder right here on my desk, cord ties that are going to tie everything up and make it easier. They're not tying a cord, Amy. You can see they are still wrapped in plastic. Both of us have this instinct of like, the solution is out there. And I think for me, what I take away from this episode and need to take away is, what if the solution is do less instead of seek out more?
Yes.
And it's not always going to be the right answer, but take the pause and ask the question.
And keep in mind that the more stressful or thorny the problem is you're trying to solve, the more likely it is that you may forget that this is an option.
That's why I like baby sleep, because the more desperate you are for an answer, the more you're like, I will buy the $8,000 swing that always makes babies sleep. Right. Like, maybe not.
Right.
Maybe not.
Your mileage may vary.
Your mileage may vary, friends. One place your mileage won't vary is subscribing to What Fresh Hell Plus. I don't know, Amy, if that segue really worked, but I'm going to lean into it at this point.
You know what Fresh Hell Plus gives you? It subtracts the ads.
Subtracts the ads. It takes something away.
Your ads. I mean, our ads are great and we love our sponsors, but if you're like a power listener and you want to listen to like hundreds and hundreds of our episodes all the time, ad-free, and show a little extra love to What Fresh Hell, that's what you'll get.
Go to whatfreshhellpodcast.com. You'll see a link to supporting Cast and how you can... You listen to it wherever.
It's 1-2 taps. I'll put a link in the show notes too. You can listen right where you're already listening. It's $4.99 a month or $39.99 a year. And it's a way to support the show.
Come find us, people. What Fresh Hell Plus. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.
So long. Margaret, it's an exciting news day.
An exciting news day indeed, Amy.
A few years ago, we launched our first spinoff podcast, Toddler Purgatory, hosted by the hilarious Blair Brooks and Molly Lloyd.
And guess what? Now Blair and Molly are back with their all-new podcast, Unsticking It.
You know Blair and Molly as two busy moms and actors. And somewhere between potty training and the pandemic, they both felt like they lost their creative kaboom.
In their new podcast, Unsticking It, they are going to talk about how all of us can get back to what lights us up after motherhood. Amy, I need this.
Me too. And Blair and Molly will be talking to fellow imaginative minds. We're talking actors, artists, and creators of all kinds about how we can all unstick ourselves from whatever muck we're stuck in.
Follow, subscribe, and listen to Unsticking It wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.